Welcome to the Turkey Hunter Podcast, the original all turkey, all the time podcast with your co-hosts Andy Galliano and Cameron Weddington.
In our weekly podcast, we're going to bring you some wild turkey calling tips like this.
From there, we're going to go into she's aggravated. There's another hen that's challenged her, or she's challenging another hen. She's going to cut an excited yelp.
Advice from old pro turkey hunters like this.
The turkeys typically don't like, I think, more times than not, to travel in an easterly direction into the sun first thing in the morning, especially after he gets up. It's a blinding thing. It's just like you. It's hard for you to see into the sun. Mm-hmm. So if I have a choice, I'm going to try to make it so that I'm going to be on the west side in the morning, east side in the afternoon of a turkey.
Exciting live hunts like this.
Holy crap, they're coming. Holy cow.
Then we're going to teach you how to cook your bird with advice such as this.
With some fresh rosemary and garlic, and then cool that off and spread that along the inside of that butterflied turkey breast that we've seasoned on both sides.
Wildlife management tips for your property, especially with turkeys like this.
If you look at the type of habitats that turkeys need for nesting and brooding, that tends to be habitat that can be managed more successfully with growing season fire than with dormant season fire.
And hopefully along the way, we'll get plenty of these.
Well, on November the 28th of 1953, I was hatched. When I popped out of my mom and the baby doctor spanked me on the bottom, I went, oh, and I've been doing it ever since.
I like that.
Thank you for tuning in, and now for this week's show.
Hello, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Turkey Hunter Podcast. You are listening to episode number 477, Turkeys and Bluegrass with Winky Hicks. And I am your co-host and the guy who is working on a suntan.
And I'm your co-host, the guy who's about to pull out the soapbox.
Soapbox? You're about to start preaching to us?
I am, but first tell everybody why you're about to get a suntan. You and the wife headed out for a little vacation?
Yeah, doing a little vacating.
Very nice, and very nice.
Yeah, you know, before I disappear off the face of the earth, because
mentally and physically.
I'll be dressed in camo for 8 weeks, but
yeah.
So I would say we're getting some quality time together, but we have our mother-in-law with us on the trip just because it gives her a chance to get out, and you know, she doesn't get out and do much on her own. So we've got her with us, and so it's all good, having a good time.
Man, good deal. Well, that's awesome. Hopefully we get some quality time in before you disappear forever, as you indicated.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully not forever, but
oh yeah, about 3 months, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let me drag my soapbox over here.
Oh,
if you can hear that.
Oh boy, here we go. Hang on, I need a drink.
Probably should. I need to go. So actually, this is going to be a multifaceted rapid fire soapbox from Cameron Weddington.
All right.
Cameron.Weddington@gmail.com.
Fire away, sir.
Guys, I don't know what is going on this year with turkey hunting already. It's only March 19th as of recording this. I've seen, and I'm not even on social media this year. I deleted mine. So there's no telling what else is going on out there. But we've got two guys have already been shot that we know about, one in Florida and one in Mississippi. That's just kind of unacceptable in my mind.
Yeah.
Don't shoot at movement. Don't shoot at sounds. Don't shoot at colors. Identify your target. it's a turkey's neck and head is what you're aiming at. That does not resemble a human in any way.
The bush is moving? That doesn't count as a turkey's head and neck?
Yeah. Don't fire at that. I don't care if it's making turkey sounds. Like, identify your target. I mean, my gosh, these guys that shoot movement, like, what in the world? They're probably killing cats, dogs, deer, squirrels, people. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But seriously, identify your target. That's unacceptable. We can't have two people shot already.
Yeah, I mean, the season's not even crunk yet, you know?
It's not so even greened up either. It's wide open everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't get it. There aren't even any bushes to hide in to move and get shot in. Like,
oh, I know it. The woods are still pretty bare.
Yeah, that's terrible. So item one, identify your freaking target.
Yes.
Item two, kind of along the same note, one of my buddies was hunting in the state of Mississippi for their opener down there on the opening Saturday, and was set up on some turkeys. There's a big flock of turkeys still together, jakes, gobblers, hens, everybody's still together. And two guys crawl past him, wave at him, and they're behind full strut decoys on National Forest land on opening Saturday in Mississippi, crawling through the woods, crawl past him and go after the turkeys and end up scaring them all over the place. But yet again, what are you doing? What? I don't care if it's legal. Crawling through the woods behind a full strut decoy on opening Saturday on public land is not a good idea when you know there's another hunter nearby.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with the feigning versus no feigning argument. This is, I mean, no one, surely, most people at least, wouldn't argue full strut decoy crawling behind it over a ridge in the hardwoods is not a smart move on public land.
Yeah.
Or private Mississippi, for that fact.
Public or private, anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, number one, I've fanned my fair share of turkeys and hope to fan a few more in my lifetime before it's outlawed everywhere. But
please,
I have had zero success with it in the hardwoods, in the woods, zero success.
I hope part of that's from you not attempting it very often.
Well, you know, again, we're not going to get on that topic of should fanning be okay or should it not be okay. It's a matter of being safe.
Yeah.
And if someone is shot behind a fan and they're crawling across a 5-acre field, a 20-acre field, an 80-acre field behind a fan, well,
yeah,
somebody needs to raise an eyebrow on that.
Yes, correct. I mean,
there needs to be a lot of questions asked.
Yeah.
If somebody gets shot fanning behind a full strut decoy in the woods, I can't even bring myself to say that you got what you deserve, because that's not right. But somewhere
you can't blame the shooter.
That,
you know?
Yeah.
And anyway, I just like that blew my mind that people are. But then also the like take the safety aspect, the like kind of audacity to wave at the other hunter as you crawl past him, who's already set up back to a tree working the turkey.
That's crappy.
We got to have more courtesy. We got to hunt safer. That's the bottom line on those two. I'm trying to make this a brief soapbox. Furthermore, item C, subsection B.
But wait, there's more.
We've already caught two guys poaching on a private land in Tennessee for turkeys about a week ago. It's a month before season. What are you doing? Apparently, there's some viral TikTok video going around of these people using this screech owl sound that, like, makes turkeys gobble or something. I don't know. I'm not on the communist TikTok. But these guys, my brother was down there, and he heard this ridiculous screech and goes back to the river and notices two guys float in the river, turkey gobbles. They pull up on the neighbor, grab their shotguns, and head in.
Wow.
I mean, come on. It's
season in Tennessee opens when?
April 13th.
Oh, I mean, they're only 4 weeks.
Yeah, a little over roughly a month. And then they did this. Anyway, he got good video and everything of them. We got the game warden. They went and found them. By the time they found them, they were actually like 3 or 4 farms down on someone else pulled up. And hopefully, Luckily, they weren't on us, actually. They were across the river on two different neighbors, and hopefully they're going to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. And they also were really rogue individuals, threatened people, very not good people. Because it was actually funny. One of the landowners was like, you know, I don't want to fool with prosecuting them. And it was actually my buddy with the game warden who was there and helped the game warden catch him. He was like, told him what all they had said. He was like, you know, never mind. Let's go for it. I want to fully prosecute him.
Yeah, no doubt.
Like he wasn't even going to do anything. And then he told him what they had said to him. And the guy's like, you know, never mind. Let's get him.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That is. It really is.
So we've shot people. We're fanning through the hardwoods on National Forest property on opening day. We're trying to poach turkeys on private land a month before season. Item four, last one, I think, so far. You know, we are 4 days into season at this point. Another friend hunted with some guys, shows up. They have bait literally everywhere and tent blinds set up over every bait pile. And they shot like three turkeys over these bait piles over the weekend. Come on. Like, yet again, what are we doing, guys? Like,
Is that a problem, though? I mean, a grain-fed hen, there's not much that's tastier than a grain-fed hen.
That's true. Hopefully they're just shooting the hens, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
What, you know, I want to say that I really want to say social media drives a lot of this pressure that people feel to kill turkeys.
I think it does.
Look, the baiting thing has been going on since before social media was ever invented, and it is an easy way out for people, and you know it's going to continue.
Yeah,
it just is, and so you know, and I hate it, but I don't know. I just don't have a desire to shoot a turkey over bait. Why? I don't even have a desire to get into a ground blind. Now, I do have a couple of places that I have to hunt in a ground blind, but I don't want to be in it.
Yeah.
Just sitting there. You know, my place is one of those because it's so small.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, that if that's what you have to do to shoot a turkey, maybe you just need to go buy one from the store.
I totally agree. Or you know what could give you probably the same rush? Wake up. Check the bird feeder out by the window. If there's a cardinal or something sitting on it, just rock him. I mean, hey, it's the exact same thing.
I've done my fair share of that. They shouldn't be eating all the squirrel food out of the bird feeder. Stupid birds.
But it is. It's the same thing. You're just shooting a bird coming to feed. Like, there's no sport in it. Like, that's not hunting. I don't get it. I don't understand that. I don't understand any of it. I don't understand. And yeah, you're right. It's not just social media, because this has been going on since time was, but I do think it may amplify it a bit, because those people probably are posting the fanned out turkey on the gram, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe they got the story of this amazing battle that took place.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just a garbage way to kill a turkey. It just truly is, and it's illegal. And I hope they get caught too. So I don't know. Yeah. There we go. I'm going to end my soapbox rant. I'm just like, I deleted all my social media for spring this year. I'm just kind of over it. I don't need it. I just want to go hunt, enjoy my spring, and talk to my friends and have a good time. And I still get all this information from the 4 days of season being open.
Right.
My gosh, what is going on out there?
Yeah.
It's the Wild West right now.
Yes, it is. Well,
crazy.
I think that there's some good, very good points that you made in there, you know, and the worst part is we could say that everyone who listens to this show obeys the law, doesn't shoot anything that they haven't positively identified as a wild turkey, a male wild turkey at that, and is not crazy enough to reap a turkey on public ground at any time, whether it's opening weekend or not.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, especially, you know, everyone's going to be out opening Saturday.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, we're not the only ones in the woods. And we do have to be cognizant of that. And, you know, it was really, I would say, eye-opening for me, just, and it makes sense, but as you go farther north, you get above the Mason-Dixon line, and you even go out west, you know, we share our public ground with non-hunters during hunting season.
Oh, and, yeah, especially out west, I would say.
Yeah, and we don't do that a whole lot in the southeast. During hunting season, it's primarily hunters. I'm not saying that you're not going to run across people hunting mushrooms. You're not going to run across somebody riding mountain bikes.
Very seldom, though, for sure.
It is. And so, you know, you've got trail runners, you've got hikers, you've got people out there picking mushrooms, looking for sassafras, whatever it happens to be out that we're sharing the woods with out there, who don't know not to wear a red t-shirt or a white t-shirt or a blue t-shirt or a red, white, and blue I Love America t-shirt while they're out looking at these things, because it looks like a wild turkey's head. And so it's up to us to be smart about this, smart and safe about what we're doing out there. You know, think about if you shot someone accidentally. I mean, even shooting someone on purpose has got to be bad enough to live with that for the rest of your life. But shooting someone on accident because you couldn't be patient enough to identify your target, you were worried about that turkey turning around and walking off. I mean, that's a tough, tough thought to live with for the rest of your life. So guys, please do be careful and be situationally aware.
Yeah.
Be aware of what's going on around you. You know, if you got a turkey, if you're sitting down and you're a turkey gobbling and you hear leaves crunching back behind you, well, be aware. I'm not saying turn around and look, because emotion may be too bad, might be too much, but it's worth cutting your eyes and seeing if you can identify what's in the leaves back behind you.
Yeah, could be a guy with a spreader putting out corn, or it could be somebody crawling up there with a fan. You never know.
Yep, no doubt.
Anyway, well, cool. sorry to go off on that. It's just like, man, come on, yeah. Guys. As a community, we've got to be better.
Yeah, we do.
We just got to be better. So, but no, speaking of that, and it's kind of funny timing on the soapbox, we've got a guest today who throws some jokes out there in regards to baiting and stuff.
Yes.
And it's all in good fun, for sure. But
all in good fun. Man, speaking of fun, he's definitely fun.
Oh, we've got, y'all just get ready for a ride. This one goes a lot of places with Mr. Winky Hicks. So you ought to Google him if you want, you know, before you get into this interview. But he, first and foremost, huge turkey hunter, builds three types of turkey calls. Is that right? Three now?
That's correct. Yeah.
It used to be two, and now he makes three. And Andy, I think you have all three or two of them?
I have two of them, yeah.
Yeah. And where'd you get those at Unicoi from him?
No, actually, one of them was given to me as a gift, and the other I bought online.
Huh, very cool. Well,
yeah, and they're turkey, man. They are.
Oh, yeah. I watched really the video of him running it, and it is. It's pure turkey for sure. And he also is a bluegrass musician, builds. I don't even know what all he builds. He kind of talks about it some with us, but he builds musical instruments.
What do you think? You want to jump in and let Winky speak for himself?
Yeah, let's hop in here and talk to Winky Hicks, and we will see you guys on the other side.
The Beverly Hillbilly. Y'all don't come back now. You hear? Keep your shoes on. If you know what I mean.
Encore.
Fantastic.
So mama said, whoop, dad here.
All right. So in case you guys have not figured it out, that's not me and Cameron.
Yeah.
Me or Cam. Yeah. So we have on the phone with us the one and only Winky Hicks. And Winky.
Thank God.
Winky is a phenomenal bluegrass musician. He is a maker of the mandolin. You've made guitars and banjos, if I'm not mistaken, but probably make more mandolin than anything, don't you?
Yeah, I built it. I'm working on number 102. I got 100, 101, and 102 that I presently got made. Well, I got 100, 101 made. I got to build a 102 when I get everything else done with these. And waiting on from Pearl Inlays now that people are so backed up and everything, it's kind of hard to get anything mailed just about now. And you got to have the inlay to complete it out before you can finish setting it up and doing all this other stuff to it. Number 100 is a fella that bought 99. He wanted it because it was a very special instrument to me. It was like a landmark to me. And I'm waiting on the Pearl cover, truss rod cover. It's going to have 100th anniversary inscribed in it. And nice. It was, to me, it was a milestone to get to that point. I thought I never would make it, you know. Between filing bankruptcy and two divorces and some other things I went through. No, not really. That's just a joke. But I finally made it to number 100. And a fellow in New York had heard about something. He was an older gentleman, I think. And he wanted 101 to play. And 102, a fellow that bought 94, I believe it was, or 90, I can't remember. And he's an older gentleman. He bought a couple of my acoustic D28 style guitars. I made them out of a piano that I found back several years ago. It was an 1854 Chickering Square Grand, like they made the old piano square back in the Civil War days, whatever. And I made it Brazilian rosewood sides and back. And I used a soundboard out of the piano for the tops on the guitar. And they was, they had a tone out of this world, man. It's like the pre-war instruments would be. And he bought those, and I built him one, man. And he wants another one, like the Sam Bush Gibson model he's got. And the wider neck, he wanted one exactly like it. So I got to build him one like that with a block inlay and a fingerboard and a few extras that Gibson had done for the Bush model way back. And we try to get them down pretty close as could for the specs and everything. And sound's more important than looks anyway. It's like a good-looking woman talking to you on the phone. You don't know what she looks like. You just know she sounds good.
Well, you know, I just have to know if they can dance. I don't care what they look like or sound like, because if they can keep up with me on the dance floor, I'll keep them.
Yes, right. I don't want them to get too far. I like to really feel the stomach rubbing my stomach, you know. It make you turn on warm. Yeah, that's what my granddaddy said. There ain't one thing that make me turn on a woman is feel her belly rubbing my back. Well, anyhow, you know, well, joke's a good joke, but I've made, 37 D28 style guitars. I made one triple alt 28 for my cousin. I made, like I said, 102 mandolins. We're working on 102. And I don't know how many banjos I made over the years. Boy in Nashville named John Yudkin, Y-U-D-K-I-N. He's got 10 instruments that I've made him that's on all your number one hit albums today. He plays some of them, not all the time. He plays fiddle a lot too. And, he's got the 10 instruments I made him. He's got, he's got three L5 mandolins, two mandocellos that I ain't never built him, only two. I had a pattern the fella sent me, just an outline drawing of one of them. It was an old Gibson style, and I took it and took Bondo, made the plates, carved them, and carved the top and back. And one's an F hole, one's an oval hole, and they tuned in the second octave C. And I tuned them down with a machine. I got a 12-wheel Peterson. Tuner's got all the, it's a strobe tuner's got all the wheels spinning all the notes at one time. You tap on the wood and it'll tell you through a microphone what note it's in. You work it from there to get it to where you want it. And he's got a mandola, which is a giant sized mandolin. He's got a Stratocaster, the first one's ever been made with a lift nut on it that Gibson incorporated in another form. But anyhow, that's another story, but he's got it. I made for him. You can play it with a slide or your fingers. First one, I guess, that's been made like that. And he's got, he's got a Dobro, slide neck Dobro guitar. You can play with your fingers or a bar on it. And he's got, let me think a minute. He's got four, five. I know he's got a D28 Martin style guitar I made him. And it, well, anyway, there's 10 instruments in all. Now he's wanting me to build him something else. He said, I want you to come up with some kind of wild configuration. This man can play. He is on every album. If you listen to Jesus Take the Wheel by Carrie Underwood, that's number 23 Manlin in that song. And he's played with every producer that come through Nashville. They get him. He's playing on that album in some form or fashion everywhere. Shania Twain, you just name it. He's played with all of them.
Hey, you said he wants something wild. Don't you make a wild turkey call?
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like he needs one of those.
He wanted one. I told him I'd give him a bag of corn to practice with. I think you had to get the turkey close in the call would.
I don't know about that now.
With him using it, it might not be, because he ain't no turkey hunter. He's a musician out of this world. I'm telling you, he's one of the greatest fiddle players you'll ever hear. He tours with there's a fella, can't even think his name. They go all down in Venezuela, playing all down in that area of the world, Mexico, playing jazz music. And he just come home from a tour with him, been gone 3 or 4 months at the time. Mm-hmm. And he'll call me, ask me what I'm coming up with, what I'm doing, stuff like that. And he'll tell me who he's recorded with, so and so, stuff like that, you know. And John Anderson, the country singer, I know y'all know him.
Oh, yeah.
Just a swing. He's good friends with me. He called me. My wife got cancer, and he called me a day and talked probably 30 minutes. I don't know how she was doing, how I was doing, so and so. He said, I'll be down that way for too long if they'll let me get out. Because he's going back out in March of this month or April on to some shows again. He comes down here, Biloxi, to some of his casinos, and he'll call me, let me know, and we'll go. He'll get me tickets and everything, and wife, and rooms and stuff like that for us to come see him. And he's a super nice fella, I tell you. That man has wrote some fine songs.
He has.
Yes, sir. He's got a Christmas album. So they're after him now to make another album. I said, the folks is after me down here just for the fun of it. It's after me.
Well, Winky, I actually had somebody request that we get you on the show, and when they requested that, you know, I have two of your turkey calls, and so I'm familiar with you from that. And so when that person requested that we get you on the show, I said, you know, I've never spoken with Winky before, but I'd like to have him on the show. I think it'd be fun to get you on there. So I flipped over your turkey call. The last one that I got was back in November, I believe, and I flipped over the back of it, and your phone number is on there. So I called you, and you were just so hesitant because you're such an introvert, and you know you're so quiet and you don't like to talk. You just were just
on my first turkey call I made. Fella said, I tried to call your cell number. I said, that was at home in prison. That was a cell number you were trying to get. Said it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
But no. I put my information on that number, and each one I signed and number each one I made. And Fella said, you ought to quit numbering them things. Somebody be down caught somebody on somebody's land and find out whose call it is, where it come from. I said, no, I'm too smart for that. told him I sell hunting permits here too. I sell we sell Adidas and all other running shoes for fast running on posted land.
So, spoken like a true Alabamian. That's what I can say. So tell everybody where you're from. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Grove Hill, Alabama is a little town between Mobile and Selma, and we don't have a real big population, but we got some real nice folks here, and it's growing some now. They put up another sign, though. They said, now you're entering Grove Hill. On the other side, they said, now you're leaving Grove Hill. So we've really repopulated. But I don't like a real big town. I hope it stays in that area called Thomasville and Jackson. If you want to go somewhere, they're growing in leaps and bounds.
Right.
And McGrove is always, it's a county seat, courthouse is here, and everything. So if it gets too big, you know, it gets to be, it ain't fun, no more, in other words.
That's right.
So everybody knows everybody almost, and stuff like that. And we got some good neighbors. And the stores we got, they increasing. They putting in some new flower shops and stuff like that, and dress shops and clothes and stuff for children. They got several of them they've added. So it's moving on up pretty good.
Good deal. So tell us, is that where you grew up, in the Grove Hill area?
Yeah. Okay. And Yeah, to my own Watley. That's right down below me, little town. Used to be, wasn't there but a church and a store. Robert L. Garrick's store was there for years. And Udell Coleman had a little store. And it was after Robert L. His health went bad on him. And he finally got out of the business and sold the stuff. And he passed away. He was sure missing, man. He died about a year ago now. And his wife is kin to me. And, of course, she wouldn't tell nobody else that probably. I can't really say the blame of it. He had all the old store products. Had the hog head cheese, the souse, they call it, and them hot weenies. We'd go in there and sit and drink a drink, eat some souse, and them hot red hots, they call them, with a pack of crackers or two, and drink a good cold drink. Of course, we always had to tell some lies. I told it took me 2 days to repent when I left that store. But he's a great miss. Everybody that went there and traded and bought groceries and stuff for years. He's about 60-some years he was in business there.
Yeah.
And I'm 70 now. I'll be 71 the 23rd this month. And it just don't seem like that many years has went down the drain since all that's went on. But a year now is hardly nothing. It's gone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Talking about the turkey caller, John Anderson. He tries to get me come up there to hunt with him. I try to get him down here. We got a few little spots you can hunt. We got some turkeys on it. But the man stays so busy and everything, he can't get out and do much. Of course, that old COVID stuff back in 2019, I had this stuff and it liked to kill me. I stayed in Mobile Infirmary for 19 days with it until I finally got over it. And a lot of my friends that killed around town, there's several folks that killed in town, and a lot of them outside of town. He killed a bunch of people. Yeah. Anyway, John, I think he got the stuff one time, but it wasn't a bad case. But he's bought close to 100 turkey callers from me over the years.
Well,
and
that...
him and Aaron Tippin bought, let's see, 36, I believe it was at one time when he run that store at Tippin Firearms there in Smithville, Tennessee. That's where they live. He finally closed the store up, I think. And his wife had the last child. I think he finally went out of business. I don't hear much out of Aaron anymore, but John, he called me about two or three times a month. We'll talk probably 15, 20, maybe 30 minutes or whatever his schedule led.
Yeah.
He's just like a cousin to me. I mean, a lot of folks think the musician, they get like that big head, but John Anderson is just as common as dirt, man. He's a super musician, a good singer, a good song composer, and he's a good friend. I mean, that's what I judge him about. But all this money you get makes you think you better than other people. I mean, that don't work. I mean, that don't work with me. I mean, you are what you are. Money don't make you. No, you make the money. It don't make you.
That's right. That's right. No doubt. Well, tell me, how did you get into turkey hunting? And then on top of that, how'd you get into making turkey calls?
Well, my uncle, Great Earl McKinley, when I was 7 years old, he took me old place behind my grandpa's house away called Old Swamp Hill. No turkey was gobbling out the swamp. He gave me an old single barrel 12 gauge with a 3-inch Magnum 6 in it. And you know how bad a single barrel kicks. Well, anyhow, he called the old turkey. And I can remember the turkey gobbling. It's been, my God, it's been 63 years ago. I remember like it was yesterday. And the old boss hen was coming out. You see, got that old deep course yip like a young gobbler's got. And she was coming ahead of him to come in to see if she could run the hen off. Well, I told him, I said, that's a young gobbler. I said, no, that's a boss hen. Don't shoot that hen now. The gobbler's behind her. And, well, I had the hammer already cocking it up on my knee. She come up down there and yep, and stuck her head up over. All I could see was about 3 inches of a head, neck, eyeball. Well, that's all I needed for that ball right in that bead on that barrel. I shot that song and that gun kicked me all upside the head. My shoulder stayed blue for about a week. But I killed that turkey. And he said, you shot the hen. I said, I shot a turkey. but the gobbler flew off and made him so mad. He took me several times after that and taught me how, what to do and not to do and how to call and stuff. And he had done killed, no telling how many turkeys. He was about, he's probably 25 years old at the time.
Okay.
But he was a super turkey. Great Earl McKinley, my mama's baby brother. And there was 12 of them in the family, I think. They was all turkey hunters. All my mama's folks was turkey hunters, and daddy's people was too, and painters and musicians. I said, one fella asked me, said, is all your folks musicians? I said, yes, sir. Even I was piano player. Said, even I was sewing machine, was a singer. But anyhow, he took me several times, like I said, and I finally killed me a big old goblin that got it started. And the yippers that they used back then was some of the box call. Leach made a good box call. But most of the time, the things made so much racket. When you told them it's squeaking and squawking, you had to put a chew tongue under the lid. That took all the chalk off of it. And I said, I'm going to, back in 95 when I started making this call, I said, I'm going to build me one of my own. Well, I started off, I got one made. And it sounded pretty good for a tree call. I kept fooling with it, and I looked at the push button call, how it was done. I said, most of them just squeak. They don't make no really good hen sound. So being a musician, I took that thing and started working with it, fooling with it. And about 150, 200 later, I finally got it right. And I said, well, that still ain't good enough. So I added that slate on the top of that striker now that rubs against your triangle in the bottom. And I said, that might be all right. And I took a striker and I made one out of a corn cob, a cedar peg. And I yipped on that thing. And my God, I said, there's a hen sound right there. But see, you got to match the striker length. The corn cob's got to weigh pretty well what it's supposed to. The peg in the bottom of the tone post has to match the octave in the box. It's all together. So being a musician, I can do these things. And the thing that rubs against the rub, the slide, it goes across it. And the weight of the slate on top all has to match. The width of it has to match for to keep the right tone in that box, in that back part. And through that stick, and another thing, knowing how to use it has a lot to do with it. But the call has got it when it leaves here. It's got that real hen sound to it. And everybody buys it's the best turkey call ever been made, period, in the world. I said, well, there's a lot of good yappers, good call makers. One thing about never knock another man's product. Now, if he asks you, what do you think about it? And I'm going to tell him what I think. It is, it ain't. But I'm not going to sit here and just say, I wouldn't buy things ain't no good. I mean, he ain't got nothing. You can't do that. It's the wrong thing to do. Right. How you know they ain't doing you that way? Always uplift somebody. Do the best you can, because the words you put out today may be ones you have to eat tomorrow, you know.
That's true.
So, always stay true to the word. The Bible always told us one scripture there. He said, in all thy ways acknowledge him and lean not to your own understanding, and he will guide your path. If anybody, everybody would rely on that one scripture, it sums the whole thing up in one nutshell.
Right.
That's what I've always tried to do. And he's guided me and kept me here all these years with his talents and gifts. Oh, man, you ain't got nothing on him. He gives it to you. If he don't, you ain't got to start with.
Amen. But
he gave me the gift to play the banjo and play the guitar. I play a little on the mandolin. I tried playing the fiddle, and the cats all left the house. So I said, well, I'll just quit fooling that thing. Yeah. But other than that, I worked on it. I knew what a turkey sounded like gobbling. It's hard to imitate the actual sound of anything that's real, but I got it pretty doggone close to the real thing. The goblin box, I kept fooling with it and fooling with it. You got to have two different sides, two different notes. I gobble, ah, bull, it's got to have two notes. I tune one side different from the other one, cut it inside and pull it down thinner or thicker, what I've got to have. And the right kind of lid, the length of the lid, the shorter the lid, the higher the pitch, the longer the lid, the lower the pitch. And I try to get it right to start with. Then tune it, it's got a lock. On the combo slate, you just raise it up out of the box. It wouldn't latch. And when you're toting these calls, they're quiet in the woods. They make no racket. I tell them about you can run across posted land. You won't never. All you do is see the man. You won't hear his caller jumping up and down. That's what I call a game warden lock. When you're running, you can't hear you.
That's right. That's right.
But the gobble box I build. It's called a wild goblin box. I get $100 for them because it takes a while to build that thing and get it tuned right. And I get 50 for the combo slate plus $10 shipping on either one. And one fella said, man, you could be getting, so these people selling these calls, some of them $200 or $300. I said, yeah, but I'm in business to help somebody kill a turkey where he can afford it and somebody else can afford it. Keep all your products at a price that everybody can afford and keep a good product and it'll always sell itself.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and well, you like y'all's program. You keep a good program out there that folks wants to listen to, interested in. They can't get enough of it.
Well, our one listener says that. So we.
Yeah, like I got my Christmas cards from all my friends last year. Said I read it yesterday. Yep. Anyway,
oh goodness!
So it's been a travel through life, man. I tell you, it's been a real travel. And I was gonna tell you, I build one more call because I don't make many of them. It's called Pure Turkey. It's made like the combo slate box is, but it's cut down from the top back at an angle. And I make a little lid,
well, it's like a lid to go like in your lawn ones, and it's got a Velcro on each end that stick the lid to it. It won't fall, don't make no racket. You just pull it loose from the Velcro, hold the box, and just put it on top of your peg in there, and put just a little pressure down it and just push it slow. It makes one of the best tree calls you ever heard in your life. And a plain hen, yep, you can put it down on the ground and put it between your knees. It muffles the side of it. It's got the best tree call you've ever heard. Ain't nothing sounds like it. He said, the man told me, said, there ain't nobody in the world got a call that does this here. Nobody ever made one does this here.
Period. Well,
and you ever heard of a man named Earl Mickle? He wrote,
yes, Turkey, I have.
Well, I'm in that book, Turkey Call Makers Past and Present, on page 101. I think that's right. And he came here years ago with another friend of his doing all survey of turkey call makers in the South. He found me, and and I called him and told him where I was at. No, he called me, and I told him. But anyway, he came in, and they sat right in the living room, and I showed him how to. I made him one of each of those calls, and he's passed away now. But I'm in that book, and he said he never seen a call that worked like this. He said, I've seen them all. He said, nobody's made one ever like this here. He said, that's a great call. He was well impressed with the stuff. And
big praise right there, because I don't know how many calls are in that book, but it's Turkey Call Makers Past and Present by Earl Mickle.
Yep.
And it's got
another one,
hundreds of pages.
Oh yeah. There's another one he come out with. I wasn't at the first one was all. I can't remember. Turkey Call Makers or something other. I can't remember exactly how it was. But
the Rest of the Best, I think.
Yeah, Rest of the Best. I think that's right. And he sent me that book, hardcover edition, and he got back home. He smoked these salmon up there. He catches wild salmon up there in Pennsylvania, and he'd have them smoked and sent me a whole bunch of them in cans. But you talking about, that's some of the finest fish I ever eat, period. Huh. I said, what you do? He said, I smoke salmon. I said, we smoke grass down here.
Did you send him some grass?
Yeah, I told him, I said, I'll send you some of that smoked grass up there, but it won't be no good if you get it already smoked. But I picked a guitar and a banjo some that day. My cousin was here with me, Curtis Hicks. He's in there, and he had on a skunk hat, and I had on my coonskin hat sitting here on the hearth of the fireplace. I got my log house that I built back in 82, the log cabin we live in. I built the whole place. And the darn termites got in the thing a while back, and they done just about ate my front floor up before I ever knew it. And my wife had a stack of albums under the stereo, one of them old 33 album stereos. And they eat the paper between the records now. There's about 20 of them. They eat all the paper between those albums out. How they got under there, I don't know how they got between as thin as they would, but they did. That's how sneaky them things is.
That's crazy.
Sneaky.
But anyhow, we've had a heck of a route to travel all these years. It's been a heck of a fun time doing it. I'm telling you that for sure.
Yeah. So where did you get the idea on that last call you talked about is the one that I bought from you in November or so?
That Pure Turkey you talking about?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it is truly unlike anything that I've seen. And that's what. Now, I already know what your sweet wild hen sounds like, and it is a sweet wild hen. There's one in every one of them. And when you have to turn it over and dump the feathers out of it before you run it. But so I started looking, and I saw that Pure Turkey, and I always like a little different call, different design and that kind of thing. And that's what caught my eye. And then when I got that thing in the mail, it started running, and I said, holy cow, that thing is that. It is.
Yeah, it does a good job. Turkey. Yeah, that Pure Turkey, like I said, I kept fooling with it. See, the length of that lid, if you make it a lot longer than what it is, it won't sound it right. You've got to get it down to the proportion where that tone is equal to. It's got a harmonic chime to it. If you get it just right, you can hear it ding and ring. You got to get all that combined with that strike in the bottom. Sometimes I had to change 7-8 posts in the bottom to get it one to match that octave in that box. That's really a lot of folks can't build them because they can't hear all that stuff like I can do. Gifted art.
Yeah.
And I've killed, there's no telling how many turkeys that I've killed. I had over 100 some beard in one box. But the darn thing, I should have put the turkey shell over them, either put varnish or something on the end of the meat part when it dried because they'll come all to pieces over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I wished I had a dollar for each mile I'd walked hunting them 100 and some turkeys. I'd I could buy me a brand new Rolls Royce that hadn't but one poor people set in. But you know, it's fun. You know, it's a lot of folks love to go sit in a stand and shoot one. If you can't get out and hunt him and hunt him on his own territory, I mean, it just takes, if he ain't gobbling and strutting just to shoot one down just because you can, unless you just want something to eat if needed or whatever, ain't no fun. That just takes all of it out of it.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
True. Have you hunted anything besides Easterns, or is all yours Alabama Easterns?
All, I ain't never been able to go nowhere. Like the ass Crocodile Dundee said, his first trip, said first trip anywhere. we hunted around here. Hey, we've always had turkeys, and they cutting a lot out of big timber, and it was the hardwood beeches and oaks and stuff like that. Turkeys, you know, acorn and beet seed and stuff. But they planting green patches, and people planting, you know, putting corn out now for game and deer and stuff. They got plenty to eat. Turkey can just about survive anywhere.
Yep. And you got that right.
But the briar patches grows up, it'll grow up so thick and everything. Your coyotes, we got a lot of hog problems in this area. The coyotes and the bobcat and fox. I trapped, you see, for about 8 years. I'd run them in at 300 sets a day, 100-mile radius a day, me and my daddy did.
Wow.
Had an old four-wheel drive pickup, and it sounded like somebody with two hammers knocking, had a wrist pin in it, but it never left us in the woods. We always made it home. We caught, I know I caught, in 8 seasons, I caught 608 fox.
Holy
and no telling how many coons and bobcat.
Lord.
But when I left the air, the train was the only thing that had a track left. there wasn't nothing that gonna catch nothing. There was throwing the turkeys, they flourished. We've had more turkeys. But now that, you know, the fur don't sell no more and people don't get out because it's expensive to do anything.
It is.
And going just to kill a coon, just throw them away or just sell the meat or whatever you do and throw the hide away, I mean, it just don't make good sense.
Yeah.
And so I quit trapping. I sold a lot of my traps. I still got a few. And a lot of folks when we catch them, some friends of mine love the coon meat, catch a few of them. You know, they love to eat it with potatoes and stuff around it. I've tried. I never have liked it. Too greasy for me.
Yeah.
Is it? I've never tried it.
Yeah. Even a possum even tastes better than that, dude. Even a big old possum. I what you call a four-wheel drive buzzard is a possum with a wink.
Four-wheel drive buzzard. I like that.
Yeah, with a wink. Yes, sir. You wrap that tail around a limb, you can't pull him out of a tree. Yes,
have you tried?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Of course, it ain't good to pull him from the front end. He's got a bunch of teeth up there that he can use real well.
That's right.
One thing about it, the underwear people get the good use of that, because you let him get a hold of it, you're going to need some new ones. Yes, but I tell you what, I was playing the casino one night a long time ago, playing the penny machine or whatever. I can't win the know-how. The lady sitting there at $132,000 jackpot. She said, what would the first thing you would buy if you won that jackpot? I said, two pair of underwear, because one never would do it. And I thought that lady was going to leave that seat hollering. And she finally got a breath. She said, I believe I would too. Oh, well. Get back to the turkey call stuff. Like I said, John has bought a bunch of them. He said that I had the only turkey call that he would be willing, like a person make, you know, to buy. Now, that was a heck of a compliment to me, you know. He said, wow. I'd like the sound of them, and he's given them to his brothers, and his dad at the time was still living, his lawyers, and whoever else he has dealings with in the music industry.
Yeah.
And he's got a bunch of them up. And put up in the safes and everything he keeps. They think I'm going to die and they're going to be worth $1 million. I ring like a Stradivarius fiddle was.
Yeah.
I said, well, he can't never tell.
That's
just,
right.
Just keep buying them. I said, I'm going to be living a while. I hope you keep buying them until all that happens.
Tell him the more he buys, the longer you can live.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Keep the wolf away from the door.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but talk about the music now. I started playing the guitar at the age of 7. Daddy bought me one of them. Oh, it was expensive. I think it was $14.50, a two-tone, I think it was. Strained about high the Dober off the neck. Anyway, I beat on that thing for a long time to find, this ain't all it is, too. You got to cord it somewhere. So we got from that and went to this and went to that and finally got us a Gibson guitar and bought me a Gibson banjo back in, I think it was about, 80, I don't know what you know about it, it was in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And I bought another one after that and sold it. So now finally got me a pre-war
Art Stockton, a fella in Montgomery, had one. I played it for several years, and then I got another one, and this band you just heard is one like Earl Scruggs has. It's a 1934 Granada pre-war flathead on it. It's like just like Earl's banjo. Got the pearl keys on it. It's a beautiful banjo, gold plated, and it's got the sound. You don't drown this song on out. You can hear it. If you got 20 guitar pickers, you can hear every note you play on it. And it's a good, very good banjo. And lucky to have one. Took me years. Took me 40 years to get a banjo like this. Yeah. And a fella had several of them. He wanted me to have it. And it's a pride. Took me about 2 years to pay for it. I painted houses for 30 years. And roofs and scraping on them old paint, breeding all that lead paint. Anyway, you can have lung cancer because that lead's got it coated. But other than that, I built all the guitars. I made the last one I built. I was going to keep that fella I tell you about that bought the two. One of them, he said, well, I want that one too. I said, well, my God, I'm going to have to build me nothing, which I will. I'll make another D28 when he died. I made one D18 out of mahogany, which was a good guitar. And a friend of mine I grew up with right down the road here, he got it, Benny Vick. He's got, everybody be on a prayer list for my wife. She, like I said, she's got ovarian cancer. We've had about 10 chemo treatments, and we've got to go back this Thursday for scanning to see how it's doing, and the 12th to have the reading of the scan and see what we're going to have any more treatments. If it's shrunk, it's supposed to be shrunk right now, though. And if they can take it out, maybe. And my friend Benny, I was telling about, he's got it's cancer in his bones, I think it is, and several different places. But the chemo he's taking has been working on him. It's really helped him. And asked all y'all prayers for Cindy, my wife, and Benny, my friend.
Yeah.
And it can't ever hurt. We got a lot of prayer. Hey, I tell you what, when I was in the hospital with COVID, I didn't know I had people in several states praying to the Lord to heal me and get me out. He said, you can't die. We got to have them turkey callers. I said, thanks a lot. But, you know, I got people call me from Virginia, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, everywhere. I said, man, I hope you're doing better. We've been praying for you. I mean, this went on for a long time.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And, it was real good to get back home. I'm going to tell you, ain't nothing like home. Like Dorothy said on The Wizard of Oz, there's no place like home. She knew what she's talking about.
That's right. That is exactly right. Yeah.
But, how long have y'all been doing the show now?
Oh,
10 years, isn't it, Andy?
Yeah. We're bumping right up against 10 years. And we've had some folks that you probably know on the show. Eddie Salter's been on a few times. We've had Preston Pittman on a few times, and
good friends. Yeah, they are.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, you and I had a conversation about them not too long ago. It's a couple of good fellows right there.
They sure are. And I tell you what, they make some good calls too, Preston. I wanted some chalk one time. That red chalk that I used, it's a dome cake. It's a red. I ordered some. It was just as pink as a doggone possum's eye. And it won't work. It ain't got no sound to it. That red chalk has got some kind of texture in it. It'll get all over your clothes and hands fooling with it, but it'll wash out. But it ain't oil. It's got some kind of composure in it that makes it stay on that lid long. And it sounds better than the blue or white or brown. It's just something better, different. Well, I called Preston one time. I called a company. I had met Preston at a turkey calling contest somewhere. I don't even remember what was that. And he said, if you ever need anything, call me. Well, I got thinking about that. Give him the number. And I called, and the lady answered the phone. I said, I'd like to get some of that dome with that red chalk, several pieces of it for my turkey. She said, you build turkey callers? I said, yes, ma'am, I do. She said, well, I can't say you no chalk. He said, be in competition. I said, ma'am, I ain't in the competition. Nobody. I'll make just a few. Anyway, it went on. I said, okay, thank you, ma'am. Well, she does done what's supposed to be. That's business of business. Well, I called Preston. He said, how much chalk you need? I told him, I said, and he sent me a whole box, 72 pieces in a box. That's been years ago. He said, don't worry about it. Winkle, man, just there you go. Have at it. Well, I won't never forget a little favor like that. You know, it means a lot to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, I looked on the internet a while back. I'd run out of chalk. Couldn't find none nowhere. And I looked on Amazon. Believe it was some fellow on there had 7 cases of it. We're talking about 7 72-piece box.
Yeah.
Well, I told him I wanted it. It was like $160 to $170, I think it was, for it all, plus the shipping. And he said, well, I ain't got but 6 cases. Something has happened to the other one. I said, oh, God, please don't worry. You better let them other 6 get away.
Yeah.
But he sent it to me, and I got enough now. I take my bandsaw and cut it. about 8 pieces. Each dome is plenty of pieces. You can use that piece of chalk that call for God knows 3 or 4 years. One little piece. And I got enough now. I send one in a rope, 2 extra number 16 rubber bands that comes with you. You can get them at any paper offices like school supplies and stuff like that. Number 16. Right. Pale Creek Alliance, either Sarco, I believe the name of, makes another good rubber band. And I use a piece of that Scotch-Brite sandpaper staple to it to go in my bottom of the call where you can clean your slate or the end of your striker with it. And the sandpaper on your stick there, the end of it, or the Scotch-Brite on your slate top.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 extra bands, which the ones that come on it, if you take care of it, last you a couple of years, just don't leave it right out in the direct sunlight, like on a dash or something like that. Them thing gets hot in a truck.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll deteriorate the rubber. But if you need anything, I always call me. I send them 10 or 12 rubber bands or whatever. Whatever people need, you know, they call me. I lost my striker. I turn around. Well, my God, it costs more to send the thing than it's worth.
I know.
But I do it. $10 to send a doggone $2 striker.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
anyhow.
Shipping's gotten ridiculous for sure.
It is. You know, it costs me $10 to $12 to send one combo slate now. That's just standard shipping. They measure the box, you know, the size, the width and all. And if you think about it, you couldn't drive middle Pennsylvania for $10, no hand back. So it's pretty cheap route if you think about it.
Yeah, it is.
But everything, groceries and everything is going higher and higher and higher. But we've always been able to make it. We used to raise our own food. Daddy, he had a big garden that had peaches, plums, pears, and everything. And now I wish you got into raising marijuana back then. It'd been a really nice. Could have probably done out of debt by now.
Out of debt, anyway, your vision to be good.
And live another 100 years. Yes, sir. That fella said withdrawal is what killed him. smoking too much withdrawal. But they tell you what, everything's been. I was only a child of the family. And my daddy, he was a great farmer. He could raise, man, my God, he could raise anything. My mama could take a clipping off a flower, stick her finger in sand, and put them in there next year. She'd have a pot full of plant. I could take a whole plant, stick a hole in the ground, it'll die the next day. I can't raise nothing.
So your gobble box is for gobbling. It's not.
Yeah, right.
So you're not yelping on it.
Yeah, on the deep, it's got a deep core side. A little bit, one's got a little bit higher than it. It's got that old deep, you know, like the old boss gobbler would have. I tell you, sometimes in the evening time, an old turkey like that deep yipping like that, he'll think it's a young gobbler coming in. He's going to come in and run him off. He ain't come running most time. He's going to ease in and slip around on you. Huh. And Joker he'd be standing 30 yards. He ease up on you and dry leaves. You won't never hear that Joker walking. If he's just easing along, them things can, man, they just know how to do it.
And so it's got a gobbler yelping side to it.
Yeah, both sides of you. Yep. It's got that deep. It's got one rubber band that goes around. It's got two little eye hooks on the side. You hook it right into it. You stretch it a little bit. And it's got just the right pressure one I seen. I think it's number 32 rubber band that goes on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy. It's got a lock on the back. I cut it out of a cutting board. It's a nylon type material. And I got it on the side. And it's got a pin that goes down through the back of the lid, goes through it. And you take and pull your lid up over the pin and you push your lock down. Back push it down and then do your gobbling or yipping, what you're going to do, and just put it back up and pull your lock back up and stick the whole lid back on that thing, and it's quiet. It won't make no racket. It won't never squeak or nothing till you want to use it. Took me a while to figure that song on out to get it. I've tried everything, and it works fine, and it's inexpensive to build. It just takes a while to make the thing. The wood that goes in this call come out of old pianos that folks give me over the years, old uprights made back first of the century. And a lot of them had poplar in them sandwiched between mahogany veneers. And I take that old poplar, but it's got to be cross-grained. It can't be long edge grain. It's got to be cross-grained coming up on the sides, or semi-cross-grained for it to sound right. Straight up and down grain don't sound good.
It won't grab, will it?
It won't sound right. It ain't got the right tone to it. It just changes it.
Okay.
It's like on an instrument. If you use quarter tone back on a mandolin, it sounds all right, but the flat tone is the best tone. Mm-hmm. And not a quarter tone top, because that's for strength, you know, on it. It has to be. But on that gold box, when I get through one, I guarantee you that song's going to sound right. It's got that gold deep, course, yep. And it won't miss a note. You can get up all day on that song under the sound of playing. Everybody knows them well. That's one thing I try to strive for. Some of these calls, you'd be yapping it. Three, one note sounds completely different than the next one. You know, an old turkey out there, you fooling with, you go to doing that stuff, the first thing he's going to do is pack his wings and he's gone. He knows a hen don't do that. And if some of them will come running, some will come running to you. I don't care what you use. It's just every hunt's going to be different. But an old turkey is like old people. He's wise. He's been shot at. And what would you do every time you went over your girlfriend's house, somebody shot your hat off and shot you? Wouldn't you be kind of leery driving back in the driveway?
I might find me a different girlfriend.
That's what I think to say. You go, hey, to do that, I'll put you some life insurance in the jeopardy. But anyway, the calls I make is old wood. The bottom is old maple comes out of the piano. It's all age, old stuff. It's dry, seasoned good, and it's just got a good tone to it. New wood sounds all right if you get the right kind, but the old wood has already got your tone. It's already that's why I use it. A lot of it in my mandolins, the neck, the sides, and the back comes out of my old piano when I can find a maple wide enough that I can make a back out of. It ain't going to move. It's already done what it's going to do, and it sounds good. It don't have to wait 20 years for it to sound. It's going to sound good today. It leaves here. You ain't got to worry. It'll get done with time. You know, same thing with anything age does. Except me, I don't know whether age is helping me get better with time or not. I think it's getting worse.
So do you shake the box to gobble on it with that rubber band on it?
Right. Catch it from the other end and hold it level in front of you or whatever. And cross it's got that old rattle like an old gobbler's got. A deep course like yep to it. If somebody you come back and do that yep right behind it, that yep, and he'll think it's another young gobbler, or either a young gobbler trying to gobble, and it's no way to mess it up. I mean, it sounds good in the way you do it. But like I say, that's a last resort. And in the morning time, it's a good locating call. You know, crack of daylight, you can shake that thing one way over on another ridge, somewhere another answer it. You find out where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good locating call.
Yeah, I was going to ask how often, you know, you've killed a lot of turkeys, it sounds like. How many of them can you think of, you think, come into that gobbler?
I'll kill a bunch of them with it. I sure have, man. I don't know how many. Ain't no telling. I mean, I've been hunting ever since I was 7 years old, and I've killed, I know, 300 or better, I imagine, somewhere in that area. I never keep up with all. I just got a lot of the beards, and I sure didn't buy none of them. It's a good call. I tell everybody woodmanship, you know, a lot of folks don't know how to hunt or don't know much about hunting. You shake that box in the woods and they already about to have a dime fit to shoot something anyhow. You have to be, I tell everybody, be careful this thing in the woods. So I've heard of people getting shot, you know, slipping up on somebody, and you be behind a tree or bush and you move and you be done shot you. Make sure when you pull the trigger, when you're looking at that old gobbler's head, his eyeball. And because I had a friend of mine in town get killed, been hunting for years and years and years. And he was behind a bush yapping this fellow. I don't know if he could hear good or what it was. And he shot the man and killed him. And the fella liked to kill him. I mean, he finally died with a heart attack. It worried the man to death. And was a good friend, a good turkey hunter too, man. He was a good turkey hunter. Just one of them freak accidents that should have never happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
most of them are. They should never have happened.
That's exactly right. But of course, you can't be too careful in anything you do. But traveling on the road and everything nowadays, there's so much traffic. You think that man sees me, or he's going to wait till I get time. Don't never presume that. You use your own judgment because you don't know what he's thinking.
That's right.
And so that's what I tell about turkey hunting. You know, it's the same thing in the woods. And you carry a child with you, whatever. You watch for snakes. You watch more for him than you do yourself because they don't know no different, you see. Mm-hmm. And I got two grandboys, 9 and 7, and I've been wanting him to kill a turkey. I bought him a 410 with some of them number 9 tongues and shells go in it. And I tell you, about 30, 40 yards, that thing will kill a turkey, man. It'll tear his head up, and it don't kick all that much.
There's no doubt.
I got a Model 12 made in 1951, 3-inch Magnum 12 gauge. Let me tell you something. Whoo, that thing will shoot, man. I shot a pie plate. No, it was a paint can lid. It was 6 1/4 inches, I think, across it. It's 50 measured yard. It put 60 holes in the center of it. Mm. It's 50 yards measured with number 6s. I thought that was pretty good. Every turkey I've ever shot that wasn't running wide open,
I killed him graveyard dead. He wouldn't even hardly kick.
Yeah.
But most turkeys I shoot, man, they within 30 to 35 yards, you kill them any gun. I mean, who wants to shoot a turkey at 100 yards to see if he's going to kill him or not? And I tell you, little folks out there that don't know about it, this old turkey, this old, he's tough, and don't never shoot him. You don't got a clear shot at his head with no limbs, no bushes or vines, because it don't take but one or two shots in a tree or something, another limb, and he going to get away from you if any way possible. You ain't going to catch him. Yeah. You can break a wing on one and his leg, and you still won't catch him. You'll outflop you and get away.
They're
done,
tough.
Done it too many times. Just shooting. And I shot a doggone tree into one time. The big old turkey walked up on me. That thing had a beard hanging on him like a hammer handle. And he wasn't about 20 steps. There was a vine hanging down there, a big old grapevine, and I didn't see it. I shot that darn vine half in two, and the turkey and flat just missed the turkey. He took off running, run across the ridge, putting. I watched him. I said, I ain't finna shoot you again. You got away that good. You can go. Sitting out with tears in my eyes talking all this language, you know.
I've spoken that language once or twice.
Other people out there listening has heard this and they know I'm telling you the truth. So that, how did I miss that turkey? I mean, what happened? It's too late then. No, he ain't gonna sit there and figure it out with you. He's gonna be gone.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest turkeys, like I said, I ever shot in my life. There was a doggone pine tree about 20 yards in front of me. You know, it wasn't that far, probably 15 yards. If that far. He come up an old road one morning. That thing had a beard hanging on him. Looked like it was 12 inches long, and it was a big old thick beard, just swinging like a hammer handle. And I had an old decoy stuck in the ground right beside him in a little trail or push trail down through there. And he was coming, his old patch right behind me. He was coming up at that, thought that he had done a fly down cackle with that combo sled like that. And he asked me to come right back, and he flew. He was in a gully, and he flew up on the edge, and I heard him coming, walking and drumming. And I seen him walk out in that road. And I said, oh, my God, that turkey. He weighed 20, 22, 3 pounds. He was big, son. And he come walking up, and he got where he could see that decoy. And I looked up, something wrong. He stopped. I eased my head around that decoy. The ground was hard. It done fell over sideways. I said, that's all I don't see. And this is the truth. Now, I had one of them old wire things. You poke in the ground, you heal. Well, he was out in the thing gobbling that. It was done getting daylight. I stuck it in the ground, old flex, whatever you call it, a rubber-looked thing. It was wadded up in the water. I didn't have time to get it all fixed out. Stuck in the ground and got this out of a pine tree, and I done it. I knew he was coming, and I seen that joker. He was 38 steps when I shot him, and knocked that big old turkey down, rolled him over. He got up. He sounded like a helicopter. He was so big, trying to fly. He got up above the timber. I knew he was gone. I went down and feathers all over the ground, just tore the ground up. That was a 3-inch heavy shot. That blend, that 5, 6, and 7 heavy shot, them things will kill a turkey. Man, they're dangerous. And I got to looking, and I said, what in the name of God have I done? And I looked, and I seen this little pine tree about 2.5 inches, waving back and forth, moving. Don't tell me. I walked up and I shot the half that tree slammed into. I got the piece in my shop right now. I took a saw, went back and cut that tree down and cut it, and it saved that piece of wood. And the man that owned the land now, he's a good friend of our family for years. I took it by. He owned a lot of timber, a lot of land. I showed him that tree wide mess. He said, now I'm going to charge you start cutting my timber.
That's right.
But that was the biggest turkey I've ever seen, ever shot at in my life, it was. And I still got that piece of wood in the shop. You see what them shot went through it. But there's enough power in that shell, even at that range, at 38 steps, and knocked that turkey down. Or if it'd been wide open, I'd kill him graveyard dead, ain't no doubt. He had at least a 12-inch beard on him, though. I've been seeing enough of him to know.
Yeah.
And there's one over there on that air. Now, this here was in 1995. My cousin that had a gravel pit they dug in this black fella's place. He had 200-some acres there. They let me hunt him. Tried to kill this turkey for years. This was 95 now. They seen him. Well, a fellow worked. He hunted him 9 years, 9 seasons. It worked there with him in the pit. He couldn't kill him. Hmm. Well, they called me. The black boy did. Said, they say you can kill this turkey. We want to see him. Oh, he had a beard at least 12, 13 inches on him in. He come out in the pit. They see him. I said, why don't you call me sometime when he's out there? Let me know. Well, they working loading trucks and stuff. He wouldn't come no closer to you than 100 yards maybe. Well, I went over there. I said, well, I'll show him to you the first week. I hunted that turkey 4 years. I ain't never even seen him. I'm serious. It's the honest God truth. I hunted him from daylight to the moon would come up trying to roost him or whatever. I heard him gobble one time. It sounded like two stove pots rattling together. That's how deep his old gobble was. And ain't no I killed seven out of there, big long beards on them. It was his children because they had big feet and about 10, 11 inch beard. And my cousin said, you ain't killed that turkey. So he'll weigh 25 pounds. He weighs an ounce. He's got about a 14 inch beard. This was 2014 now. And he had a beard on him about 12 inches back in 95. And he had to be probably 8 or 10 years old then. And this turkey, we looked at, he's probably around 25 years old. And there was two cougars moved in that area. There was a lot of deer in there. And that old turkey went missing after them cougars come out around 14. And they never see him anymore. I think that cougar must have caught him. And I told the game warden, I said, I'm going to tell you something. Now, if he walks up on me, that cougar, I may not kill him, but he's going to do some funny things standing up. And he said, well, if you kill him, y'all call me. Because if he's coming that close to y'all, he's dangerous. He's real dangerous. He ain't supposed to do that, come up and walk up on you. They smell you, man. Them things is wild. Well, if he wanted to kill you, he'd cut your head off easy, cut your throat. Them things is super powerful and strong. And we got a lot of them in this area. The conservation office says they ain't supposed to be here. But my God, eyesight don't fool you. I've seen a bunch of them. Blackens, too. Got one black panther. I seen him cross the road down below the house. He's about twice bigger than a dog. Got a tail about 3 or 4 foot long. And he's black as smut. And he come across the road. I mean, that thing can run, man. Jump. He jumped probably 20, 30 feet. That thing's gone. He just glanced him. He's gone. But far as, you know, balling a human being, I don't think one of boy, unless it's a mama's got little ones or something like that, or get him hemmed up or him caught in a trap or something like that, it'd be dangerous. But as far as just actually barring, I don't think they would attack a person. I don't think they would. But I hear places out in California, people getting killed all the time by them cougars, hikers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I can tell you one thing. This hiker, if I go, I'm going to have my 9mm on my side with 12 reasons to leave me alone.
That's right. But, let me ask you one more question. And I know you got to scoot and pick up one of the grandsons from school here in a minute, but
about 2:30.
Okay. In making turkey calls, how much of a factor do you think you being a musician and making musical instruments yourself helps you in being able to make turkey calls and know what you're looking for in the sound?
Well, main thing is always, like I say, in the woods, listen to the hen, how she sounds. In my mind, I can hear that sound by being a musician. But musically inclined, you got that to hear the tone and everything. And when I get one right, when I hear that thing, that sound, I know that's that note I'm listening for. And I can take one and listen to that hen yipping on my 12-wheel Peterson tuner and turn it on. It'll tell you what note she's in when she's yipping. A steady yip, like a DIA or whatever she's in. But every turkey's different. They ain't no two hens sound the same. None of them don't. But they all got that musical background. They got that tone quality right there. You know, you can hear a hen start yipping, and you tell it, ain't nobody sounds exactly like a real hen does. It's just the cadence, just the length of the yip she's making and stuff like that, and everything is just different. And to incorporate that in a piece of wood, you got to be able to know music, because it is an instrument you're building, a musical instrument for it to sound right. Like that, really.
Yeah.
And what I always incorporate, I tell everybody, I said, it'll be built as close to the real thing that's humanly possible, I can tell you from my expertise. I said, but if it don't work, I would gladly send you a bag full of about 20 grains of corn when you're sitting there. You could thump them out there around you, and I guarantee you that'll bring you in with that.
That and those Snickers will get you far in Alabama, won't it?
Yes, the Adidas, they said they guaranteed speeds above 20 miles per hour. Like that fella said, he went in, he was limping, and said, what happened? I said, I slung a recap running from the game board this morning. Hey, that reminded me when we was traveling, going back to these festivals and stuff, we were looking for a fiddle player. We were going along, I seen this fella walking down, so he looked like he was limping. And he had a fiddle case in his hand. I told him, pull over, boy, that may be our answer right there. And he pulled up his head on one shoe. That's what he was limping like. I said, I ain't down on his luck. Said, I lost your shoes. I see. He said, no, I found one. I said, that's old man right there, boy's hired. But we've got a good bluegrass band. We've got a guitar picker. I've been playing with about 30 years. I've been picking banjo 55 years. I don't get to pick much. That's the first time I picked the thing up in 2 or 3 weeks.
Hey, it doesn't sound like it's been a while.
It has, and your hands are get working on stuff and calls and stuff. You're tensioning up your muscle stuff. But like I said, I got a bunch of turkey calls now. I got to be up a store. Got a bunch of individual people call from different states, Kentucky, Virginia, everywhere. Now, the goblin box is catching on, so they want them now. But I ain't going in the wood unless I got a goblin box and that combo slate. Without those two calls, I mean, it'll do anything. It'll do the fly down cackle. It'll do the your fight and purr thing. It cuts the cackles. And that good old long hen, yep, it'll do quiet with just the push button on the thing. And that goblin box behind, I mean, my God, what else do you need? I've seen folks that have a vest, got 90 calls. You get in the wood, don't even want to know what you use. Get the one that sounds like a real turkey, yep, to the gobbler, and do it right. And if the gobbler don't want to come to you, you ain't coming to you. I don't care what you got. Just yeah. Do your best. Carry a good call. Yep, carry a good call. Make sure it says Hicks on the end of it. But there's a lot of good call makers out there. Like I said, there's just oodles of good call makers. Get one that works for you and stick with it. And anybody has to brag on it. If it ain't a good call, don't use it. Use something else. I mean, mine, anybody's. You find one that works, use it.
That's right.
And but I tell you what, it's been a pleasure to do business with all the people that's call. I think I made 7,000 something combo slates.
Wow.
Well, 5,000 something in all. I made a little over about 7,500 with the goblin boxes and just the regular sweet wild hen, just push by made to start with. And the pure turkey and the goblin boxes all together, about 7,500 seemed like in that area. I give a lot of my calls away for organizations like Child Advocacy Center. They have auctions I give to them every year. People are called, donate and call for banquets, fundraisers. And stuff like most of it's for children. I was in Nashville one time back in, I think it was 2001 up there, and it got so expensive I just couldn't go at the time. And this man come by and he had a son with him, about 6 or 7 or 8 years old maybe. And I was yipping on the call. I said, Dad, I want one of them calls right there. He said, no, I don't think the man might have had no money. I don't know what the situation was. He said, no, son, I can't afford it right now. And he said, yeah, but I want one of them calls. I said, son, what's your name? He told me, I don't remember. I picked one up, yep, on it, and that sounded good. And I said, what's your name? I signed it for him. He said, no, sir, we can't. I said, you ain't got to buy it, sir. I said, this is a gift to him. He didn't say nothing. The little boy went away. I wouldn't have took $500 for that smile.
Oh, I bet.
For that. And I had a lady come to me one time. She's in a wheelchair. Somebody was pushing around. She walked up by my table, and she was lipping on some of them. I mean, he pushed her up there. And I didn't know whether I had the money or not. And I said, what's your name, ma'am? And she told me, and I took one of them out. She was yipping on it. I signed it to her and said, good Lord bless you and stuff like that. And that lady went away, and if it was false tears, it would be on her. But she was crying like a baby because she wanted one. I don't think she could afford it either. But she got a good call. Things like the good Lord always will bless you. He blesses you from your heart. He knows what you're thinking. You can't outgive him, and you can't outthink him. So I always use that for all my stuff. It's every one of my calls is that good luck and God bless on every one of them. If a man tells me I can't write it on there, he won't get the call, period. That's just how it is.
I like it. I like it. Well, very cool. Well, Winky, this has been a blast. I've enjoyed this. And I'm wondering if you still got that banjo anywhere nearby and you want to play us out.
Let's see. What would you like? How about a little Cripple Creek?
Was there? Yeah.
That's what they done on Hee Haw all them years, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. And Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, I got to pick with Earl back in 82 up in his home in Nashville. And I played with Josh, the dobro player, for a couple of years. Him and Kenny Baker had come down and played in his festival, and they'd get me to play banjo with them. And that was you think you can play till you play with them kind of people. But Lester Flatt was always, he was my favorite, him and Earl was.
And he'd always tell Earl, he said, Earl was something go wrong with your banjo there? And Earl was playing the Earl's breakdown. It went out of tune or something other. And he sung on this song one time. Earl was just holding a banjo. And Jake, the bass player, said, "Hey, Lester, even Earl sung on that song." And Lester looked, he said, "Yeah, Jake, he just sings when he wants to." And stuff like that just cooks my goose, in other words, when he tells them that. And he talked about the Beverly Hillbillies now. When he first interviewed, he said, "Yeah, that old song," said, "we kind of hated that old song there for a while, but you know, after it made us about $1 million, we kind of got, well, we loved that old song." And he's talking about the Martha White tune, you know, he said, I hear see some folks keep hollering for Martha White. Didn't know y'all heard that song up in this part of the country, said, but we'll play it for you. He said, "Pick it, Earl." And they kick that thing off and play it, man. Oh, my God. We use that for our theme song, the Martha White theme song. And as long as we live, Earl told me, out of his mouth, I was sitting in the living room picking all this stuff. And he went and got his old banjo. I didn't have this banjo at the time. I had that 30 model then. Anyhow, I was picking. And he said, "Son, I'm going to tell you something." I said, "As long as you live, I won't never die." And that meant more to Curtis McPhee. He said he didn't tell you that just because he couldn't. Because he said, "You play more like me, that Reuben and stuff like that. I learned it from notes, and I've won several banjo contests, championships with that song. I learned it note for note off the record." Of course, a lot of banjo players can pick it. But it's the style you play, the tone you get out in the banjo. This banjo here gives you that sound like his style anyway. I'm sure it sounds over his phone like that. It rings like a bell.
Yeah.
And but when you interview this, when you get this thing to come out, make sure you let me know when it is where I can hear y'all and hear all this mumbo jumbo I've been telling you, see if it all come out to be truthful.
If you didn't get a laugh, if you didn't get a laugh out of that one, you're not ready to laugh.
That was a hoot.
Yeah,
I think I mentioned last week that I was going to tell another story about him. So he and I were talking on the phone, I think the day after you and I recorded with him for the interview for the show. And he was asking me about my heritage. He said, "Well, Galliano," he said, that's an Italian name. And I said, "Yeah." And he said something about, you know, researching my family tree and, you know, knowing where my family came from. And I said, "Yeah, I know where they came from. I know what town they're from in Italy." And so, yeah, I've done all that. I've even been to the town that they're from in Italy. And he says to me, "Well, yeah," he said, I went down to the courthouse several years ago and I started researching my family tree. And then I found out it had been clear cut."
That dude is so full of one-liners.
I have never heard anybody use that expression in talking about their family tree before, but I love it. I will be
freaking hilarious.
I'll be borrowing that from now on. My family tree has been clear cut.
Yeah. I mean, that guy just like has that wit and one liner sharpness that is just makes people naturally funny, you know?
Yeah.
And also makes a heck of a turkey call. And I think he's a heck of a turkey hunter. I mean, great interview for sure. That was a unique ride for us.
Extremely talented. And for you guys, just if you can just go online and look at some of the mandolins that he's built.
Mm-hmm.
And he's built banjos. He's built just a bunch of musical instruments. But just go online and look at them. They are beautiful, beautiful. He is a true craftsman. And, you know, he loves woodworking. He loves music and obviously instruments. And, you know, his turkey calls sound amazing as well. So go check him out online. If you guys want some calls, give him a telephone call and he'll ship you some out. But heck of a good guy and an amazing, talented individual.
Yeah, no doubt. Make sure y'all do that. Check him out. And speaking of that, we also have to remind everybody, we have turkey calls available on our website, Diaphragm Turkey Calls, Bat Wing, Ghost Cut, and a Combo Cut are available in the show notes at our Shopify store. And then Patreon members also, we have that available if you'd like to join us on Patreon. I did my first book of the month And we've had some pretty cool chats in there. And we've had a Zoom call already with some Patreon members that was a freaking blast. And we ask questions of our guests from Patreon. So that's pretty cool, too. You get to know who's coming up on the show and ask the guests questions in future episodes. So make sure you check that out, too. That will also be linked in the show notes.
Yeah, a lot of benefits come with that membership. So
yeah, we appreciate you guys who are supporting the show, no doubt.
Yes, yes, very indeed. Much. Awesome. So yeah, that's the favor of the week?
Yeah, go check it out. That'll be a good favor of the week, I'd say.
All right. And what do you think?
I think you should wrap it up.
Right. You don't have any more soap? You need to get out of that box?
Not this week. I'll probably have a reload for next week at the way it's going.
All right. Well, then I'm going to say thank you guys so much for tuning in this week. We know that you have choices, and we appreciate you spending your time with us. We hope you have a wonderful week, and if you're hunting out there, a safe week as well. And we look forward to seeing you again next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thanks for tuning in. You were just listening to the Turkey Hunter Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please go on over to iTunes and leave a 5-star review. And make sure to head over to www.iamturkeyhunting.com to subscribe for free turkey hunting tips, tactics, strategies, and product reviews to help you have a more successful turkey season. And stay tuned for upcoming episodes on hunting afternoon birds, how to film your hunt, and the breeding cycle of hens, as well as some guest interviews. Thanks again for listening. We know your time is valuable, and we appreciate you sharing some of it with us. See you next week.